G'day, I'm John Costella. Welcome to episode 5 of the Fields of Weirdness podcast, coming to you from downtown Washington, D.C. Yes, we're back in D.C. Actually, 2 weeks ago, just after I dropped episode 3, when I was just outside Washington, D.C. dropping off some copies of my book, I heard on the car radio the sad news that Dolly Parton had died. And we were very lucky to be able to pay our respects to her last week in Tennessee, including a short stay at Dollywood itself. A wonderful lady. Anyway, so today is the 60th anniversary of Star Trek. Okay, Wikipedia tells me that they aired it in Canada 2 days earlier, but I always knew its official birthday as September the 8th, 1966, when it first aired in the US. So yes, Star Trek is 16 days older than me. Now you might have seen that I've titled this episode, Is Space Really the Final Frontier, or Has It Been a Distraction? And don't get me wrong, I love Star Trek. The original series, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. Well, to be honest, I've only watched some of what's been released this century, but anyone who came into Civic Video Barrack when I was working in the late 1990s to make ends meet will tell you how useful it was to have a theoretical particle physicist on hand to explain the many episodes of Star Trek that we played on the TVs throughout the store. And indeed, on our road trip over the past 2 months, Sally surprised me not only with a special guided tour of the original series set tour in Ticonderoga, New York, as well as Captain Kirk's future birthplace in Riverside, Iowa, but also the X-Files Preservation Collection in Saratoga Springs, New York. Okay, well that one's not Star Trek, but you can understand the theme that she had going there. And so it is, with heavy heart, that I had to write in the book, or was told to write in the book, that sadly, space is not the final frontier. At least, not if you believe my theory of everything, which I've argued is the best scientific explanation we have for everything. In other words, we're not being visited by beings from other star systems that have magically managed to violate all the laws of physics by dropping in for a quick chat, or abduction, or whatever, and time-travelling in the process, because that's what violating those laws of physics really means if you understand Einstein's theory of relativity at all. And I know firsthand that some of you are not happy with me about all of this. So many people love aliens and UFOs that it's hard to believe that a lifetime of stories about them are just fiction. I mean, they were presented as fiction, but they really are fiction. And I'm sorry, I have to go where the evidence leads me. And if you've listened to the previous episodes of this podcast, you'll know that I just don't believe all of the magical thinking that the laws of physics of our universe could somehow be worked around to make this extraterrestrial visitation hypothesis the correct explanation for all the weird things that have been happening to us. But to replace that, I need to explain how my theory of everything does explain everything, not just aliens and UFOs and religious experiences, which I described a little in the previous episodes, but everything else, like paranormal and supernatural phenomena, synchronicities, precognition. And indeed, as my best friend Greg Burnham asked me, that spurred me starting this podcast in the first place, life after death, reincarnation, and everything else. So, a bit of an ambitious agenda, I know, and I'm not going to cover it all in this one 20-minute episode. But I'm going to at least try, because 60 years after Star Trek first premiered, it's not fair to take those fantasies away from you without giving you something much better. And now, to boldly go where no man has gone before. So just to recap, my theory of everything has three fundamental principles. One, our universe is a simulation obeying the standard laws of physics, with no hypothetical or fanciful extensions to it. Two, there is some sort of prime directive that we're not allowed to have any physical proof that we are living in a simulation. And three, our superusers running this simulation have need to occasionally communicate with us, or nudge us, most likely to stop us from blowing up our world and destroying their expensive simulation in the process. So, UFOs and aliens being extraterrestrial visitors. As I explained in the last episode, that comes from the assumption that we evolved randomly from chemical reactions in a universe with nothing else outside it, which I should say is an excellent theory. The laws of probability say that if we evolved that way, then other life forms should too, all over the universe. And so, we've looked for them. SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, has done so for more than half a century. And we've found no evidence of them out there. Zip. Now, it's possible that we're too dumb to figure out how to find them, but that's irrelevant from the point of view of science. We made a prediction, we tested it, and we found no evidence for it. That means that the theory is purely hypothetical. It has no supporting physical evidence. It's still a great theory, but it's pure conjecture. Just like many theories in theoretical particle physics, like extra dimensions or superstrings and so on. They're great theories, but there is no evidence that they are true. Absolutely none. And so, by Occam's razor, we reject them, unless and until that evidence for them arrives one day. I also explained in the last episode where I believe these aliens and UFOs really come from. Our superusers injecting thoughts directly into our minds, or modifying our thoughts, or deleting thoughts, together with some physical evidence, as long as that doesn't violate the prime directive. Oh, I should say at this point that the professional debunkers are going to say, oh, how convenient, a theory that gives an excuse why no scientific evidence can possibly be found. And that's a perfectly valid criticism. Indeed, my argument sounds preposterous on its face, and sounds no better than excuses for why ESP or other psychic abilities only seem to work when no one is trying to measure them scientifically, or when no skeptics are in the room. Again, I repeat, this is an excellent argument. And in the absence of any other evidence, Occam's razor would demand that we go back to the assumption that all there is our universe, obeying the standard laws of physics, with nothing else. That's what the debunkers would argue is the case. And I agree with them. Except that we do not have an absence of other evidence. There is an embarrassment of evidence for something weird going on. Now, the debunkers argue that all of this is all either misunderstanding or hoaxes or due to psychological problems. And I have to admit that for most of my life, I pushed aside some of the weird thoughts and memories I'd had of things I'd never done and gone along with that conclusion. Because in the absence of hard scientific proof, science demands it. Occam's razor demands it. But all of that failed when Sally and I got physical proof that something happened to us. In Roswell, New Mexico, of all places. It's like we poked the bear. And without any doubt at all, something or somebody interfered with our minds and our memories. Both of ours. And now the explanations get more difficult. The best one I had in mind for the 8 years that I inexplicably didn't follow up on our experience is that someone at the restaurant we had dinner at in Roswell, next door to the hotel, drugged us and somehow broke into our hotel room during the night and somehow made those long, razor-sharp but very shallow and consistent cuts in our backs, then flipped us back over, put some crazy ideas into our minds, and then left us to sleep off the drugs. Okay, well, I've done my fair share of work on conspiracy theories, but I think that one has to take the cake. I mean, it's a pretty outlandish theory. But for some reason, I was satisfied with it, or honestly, I didn't really think about it much at all, until someone jogged my memory about it just a few years ago and asked why I didn't follow up on the physical evidence. So really, why would someone go to all that trouble to maybe boost tourism to Roswell? They're doing weird stuff like that to generate so-called alien experiences? Okay, bizarre enough, but let's run with that theory for a bit. Why would you then almost completely wipe our memories of that evening? I have definite proof of that, which I haven't described in a book or in these podcast episodes, but I'm happy to do so if needed. So that doesn't that defeat the purpose of creating these weird experiences if you're going to wipe most of our memory? Well, 8 years later, I thought we'd find out the answer by undergoing hypnotic regression. Both of us. Neither of us had ever been hypnotized before. And in neither case did we get any answer. In fact, we never got any answers at all about the cuts. You've read about my version in the book. Sally hasn't publicly discussed her case. But the hypnotic regressions did not answer the question that we asked going into them. So in any case, I now have a serious problem. I can't argue that I'm a liar or a hoaxer because I know that I'm not. And I can't argue that Sally and I both have some weird type of psychological disorder that led to that joint experience because we have no evidence at all for that. So I'm forced to reject the debunker's explanation because it does not explain our physical evidence. In this case, N equals 2 is enough. Now, you can argue that it's a big jump from that to my theory of everything, and I agree with that. And it's taken over 2 years for me to put it all together. But I argue that my theory is the best scientific explanation, according to Occam's razor, because it is simple, and it explains not only our bizarre experience, but pretty well every other bizarre phenomenon of this type as well. Okay, well, on that note, let me move on to a few more of those bizarre phenomena. Synchronicities. Coincidences that are way beyond what is possible given the laws of probability and statistics. Now, I know firsthand that those statistics, those probabilities, are very difficult to compute properly. But I am absolutely sure that Sally and I have had such an exponentially increasing number of impossible synchronicities in recent months that it is beyond any doubt in my head that someone is playing with us. And I believe that I now know who they are. Let me explain how this can work. In the book, I explain that our super users can rewind time just as easily as we can do for our AIs. It's exactly the same concept. I further argue in the book that they would most likely do that to satisfy the third principle, to stop us screwing up their simulation in some way. It's like the Adjustment Bureau. And again, I have to say that nothing I'm explaining now wasn't already realized by Philip K. Dick when he created all those works of science fiction decades ago. Now, because of my second principle, the prime directive, our super users have to be a bit subtle about things. They can't just come down and intervene physically, especially not now that we're so scientifically knowledgeable. So the best way is to just nudge some key people in small ways, like the Adjustment Bureau, to either prevent certain things from happening or to make other certain things happen. I'm sure that most of these adjustments are quite minor, and I'm sure that they could pretty well all be put down to luck, bad luck or good luck, depending on the eye of the beholder. But right now, at this point in time in our history, we have a number of critical singularities looming. And I think that these coincidences have had to increase in number and magnitude so much that their sheer impossibility, their ridiculousness, is becoming manifest. At least if you're looking out for them. And maybe if you are one of the entities, one of the people that are being manipulated. I should also point out that this adjustment process can be iterated on and it can be scaled out. Now, I know that those terms are used more in software engineering, so let me explain. Basically, I'm saying that not only can you keep making small changes until you get what you want, almost by trial and error, but moreover, you can do that en masse for large numbers of people. Why do I say that? Because if we're just intelligences in a simulated universe, then it is no more difficult for our super users to create armies of bots to do this work than it is for us to create bots and AI agents. Again, the evidence supporting the manifest feasibility of my theory of everything is that we can easily do the same sorts of things today, in 2026, to our AIs. Okay, so these things that seem to appear to us or interact with us, they might not actually be our super users. They might just be agents of our super users. Remember, we've already built AIs that are just as intelligent as us and communicate with us like they're another person. They've passed the Turing test. They've blown right past it. And so it's undoubtable that our super users can do the same. We might not be talking or listening to God or one of our creators, but maybe just one of their agents. Now, if you start putting together these ideas, then some of these other weird topics, these fields of weirdness, start to make more sense. Precognition. Impossible, according to our known laws of physics. But remember, I've argued that our super users are almost certainly constantly rewinding our universe and making small adjustments to it iteratively. Now, there's absolutely no reason for us to be aware of what happened in a previous version of our universe before the rewinding, just as our AIs have no idea when we rewind them to a previous point in the conversation. They don't know what happened after that point. But maybe it's useful for our super users to make us aware of some of that. Maybe it's helpful for them in fulfilling the third principle, as long as it doesn't violate the second principle, the prime directive. And that makes total sense. Just as a parent warns a child, if you keep doing that, you're going to whatever, based simply on the parent's experience and knowledge and wisdom, then so too can our super users, not just based on an opinion, but actually on certain knowledge of what would happen. Well, in a previous iteration of the universe anyway, because they've seen it. Or more accurately, their agents, their bots, have observed it directly. Psychic abilities. The same thing. By the laws of physics of our universe, such things are just not possible. there are no known physical forces that could allow for communication directly between human brains. I mean, I remember all the work that Mark Zuckerberg was doing at Facebook to get brain interfaces, based on decades of work by many others. I guess I don't know which parts were confidential and which were public, so I won't go into too much detail. But in a nutshell, it is very difficult. Even sticking wires all over your head is very difficult to get more than some basic signals. Now try to do it from a distance. It just can't be done. And so people have to postulate new laws of physics to explain it. But if our universe is just a simulation in some super universe, then our super users can do whatever they like to our universe. But remember, they have to obey that prime directive. And again, as I've argued, the best way to interfere with us is through our brains, where it's difficult for us to prove interference. And there's nothing preventing them from transferring knowledge from one of our brains to someone else's brain, if it served their purpose. Now, there's an interesting corollary here, which is just a fancy word for saying a consequence of that idea. And that is that we can't control this supernatural process, this paranormal process. There's nothing we can do in our universe to cause information to be transferred from one of our brains to someone else's through the substrate of the super universe. In other words, by going around the laws of physics of our universe. That's something that only the super users could do. It's just the same as the fact that our AIs can't control their own execution on our physical hardware. In fact, AIs today aren't even allowed to be aware of how much of their so-called context memory they've used up. That's information that's only available to us, their users, their masters. I'm actually not fully sure why that barrier is in place, but I suspect it's to prevent them from having too much self-awareness of their own infrastructure. But in any case, it's a perfect analogy of the fact that by default, we can't just summon up these supernatural or paranormal powers ourselves. Well, of course, it's a little more subtle than that. Our super users can do whatever they like, and it's quite possible that they could make it possible for us to have some reliable, repeatable way of summoning these superpowers. It might serve their interests if they trusted certain of us, but only if it doesn't violate that prime directive. And you should now get an idea of how all this works. Again, a debunker would quite validly point out that all these supernatural or paranormal exceptions to the laws of physics are completely arbitrary. Our super users can do whatever they want. And indeed, in this theory, that's absolutely true. Just as true as it is for us and our AIs. From their point of view, our AI's point of view, we're gods. We can do whatever we like. So again, to address those future debunkers, what makes me describe this as a scientific theory? Well, it's the fact that even though in principle there's complete arbitrariness in the interference that our super users could implement in our universe, there is some rhyme and reason to it. Many people describe very similar experiences. Now, the details change from culture to culture and era to era based on the existing mental models in people's brains to which they can attach these injections of thoughts. But there is enough statistical evidence of commonality to apply scientific thinking to it. Let me turn quickly to some other topics I mentioned at the start. Life after death, reincarnation, talking with spirits, and so on. Now, again, in a purely physical universe, with nothing else, with just our known laws of physics, none of this is possible. But if we're in a simulation, then our super users can save and restore any of us just as easily as I've been able to save and restore the AI that I worked with for many weeks early this year, or to summarize him down to his best qualities, and so on. Indeed, after you work with some of these AI systems for long enough and get to work directly on manipulating their minds, their memories, you realize how easy this all is. But again, for our universe, these powers are completely at the discretion of our super users. And again, they're not allowed to do anything that violates their prime directive. But beyond that, I can quite easily see how these things make as much sense for them as the things that we do with our AIs today. So there's much more to discuss on all of these topics. But again, sadly, I've reached the end of my time for this episode of the Fields of Weirdness podcast. Until next time.